Welcome to Comedians Talking Baseball, your weekly MLB recap podcast with your host, comedian Joe Kilgallen. With me, as always, I've got comedian
Mike Bridenstine. I nailed it.
There you go. I don't know why I don't just say your name for you.
It's my least favorite part of a podcast when someone's like, I'm Mike Bridenstine, like after the first person says it. It's a dumb thing. We all need to stop doing it.
All right, I'll stop doing that, man. I made that mistake. And I'm glad you called me on it because it didn't feel right. I should have just introduced you and then you could just chime in and be like, how's
it going? No one talks that way except for on podcasts. It's so stupid.
Well, on radio, they'll be like, I'm Dan Bernstein. I'm Jason Goff. You're listening to 670 The Score, you know, that kind of thing.
And I'm Andy Rooney.
There you go, man. Whenever I watch 60 Minutes
safe.
Now.
Let's talk about what?
Whenever I watch 60 Minutes Now or catch it, I always think about what you talked about on the podcast last year or when we first started doing it, maybe 2 years ago.
I know which one you're going to say. They all sound like Rodriguez to me.
Yeah, tell the story real quick.
Andy Rooney, that's his name, right? Not Mickey Rooney. I have a fucking bit where I talk about how I don't know the difference between the two.
And yeah, I've gotten them confused.
They're not even related. But Andy Rooney would go on 60 Minutes and give, like, you know, I don't think I need to explain that. But he goes, when I was a kid, baseball players had names like Ruth and Gehrig. These guys all just sound like Rodriguez to me.
Just totally being an old man, not realizing the racism that comes with that.
Aren't like Ruth and Gehrig like German names? So
I believe.
Dutch? Oh.
I think Gehrig's a Dutch name. Ruth might be German. Who knows?
But it's just so stupid. It's like names are all from different countries anyway.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, there's no American last name. Someone listening might be like, what about Smith? No, that's English. A Native American, you could argue. Yeah. Could have like, you know, like Cherokee or something. I don't know. Name of the tribe. I don't know if there was a guy in the tribe whose name was like Mikey Cherokee or something.
Did they have like names or did they just have like descriptive
dances with wolves? Is that what you're going with right now?
Adjective and a noun.
I kind of like that better than names.
Yeah. That's what names mean anyway. Kilgallen.
Yeah.
Something.
Kill. The K I always refers to like the church in Ireland, but I don't know what gallon means. It's not a gallon of milk. Don't go there. Okay.
Wait. Is it a gallon of milk?
You son of a bitch. You son of a bitch. Hey, though, I am glad you brought up Babe Ruth, though.
Yeah.
We talked about our Mount Rushmore of movies last week, and I'm going to get to that in a second, but I came across an article about Babe Ruth because I was trying to remember who it was. I was talking about 30 for 30s with a friend of mine a couple days ago. We're talking about our favorite, you know, ESPN 30 for 30s. And Bo Jackson's is one of my favorite.
That's a great one.
The great one, right? And there's some stuff I didn't even know about. Like, we just know Bo Jackson, Bo knows, and the guy was this freak two-sport athlete. I didn't realize that he was more dedicated to baseball, like you and I, that when he waited for the Royals season to end, even if the Royals were like 15 games out of first place, he was finishing the baseball season. Then he would join. He never played a full season of the NFL. He would always miss like the first three games because he was playing baseball. And then he'd go from the diamond to practice and destroy everybody where everyone else had, you know, preseason camp and everything. He didn't have any of that. And it was just that good. But what was cool in the 30 for 30 was when he was like his first like batting practice at Kauffman Stadium in Kansas City. He was taking BP, of course. And there was an old, by the way, it's being the whitest guy in the world. Whenever I say Negro League, I feel like I'm being racist, but I know that's what it was called. Right? Don't you just feel like you're being racist saying Negro League? I feel like someone nearby is going to be like, what the fuck did you say? That's
also
what it was called.
Yeah, there's a lot of words like that that just sound like, now, can I say Mexican?
Well, people of color is one that everyone like prefers now. Like, oh, she's a POC. And I'm like, what is that? What's POC? And they're like, oh, it means person of color. And I'm like, yeah, so certain things like that, just I'm like, I don't know about that. So whenever I say Negro Leagues, I always think, like, am I okay? But the guy was sitting there. He was holding court. He played for the Kansas City Monarchs, you know, back in the day. It was like kind of a big deal. And I couldn't remember his name. So anyway, that's how I started looking at Babe Ruth. But what he said about Bo Jackson, which was incredible, was he heard, you know, he's not, his back was to the field. So he's not even watching Bo Jackson take the swings. He's talking to someone. And on Bo Jackson's first swing where he blasted it, he stopped what he was telling people because he was like, you know, it was like five or six people around him all listening intently to this dude. And he was like, I haven't heard the ball make a sound off the bat like that except for two other times in my life. And this guy was like 85. And they asked who were the other two other times. He said, Josh Gibson and Babe Ruth.
Dang.
Yeah. And so that's how hard the ball came off. I would love, it'd be cool if there was, you know, Statcast back in the late 80s, early 90s when Bo Jackson was swinging it, because I would love to know how true that was. You know, it'd be great if there was, you know, your exit velocity, like how hard was it coming off the bat? I believe it probably hit it really hard. That dude has a freaking nature, you know? So I'm sure it's coming off a good, at least 115, you know?
Yeah. Also, how cool would it be to see Josh Gibson clips? I don't even think that exists.
Is there no video of him at all? That's tragic. Because the people who saw him said that. Well, and then I started to go down that wormhole because they called him the Black Babe Ruth.
Yeah. Why did no one keep stats of those games? Like, people kept stats of my fucking Little League game.
I don't know. Maybe, I think, was it the baseball card? The invention of the baseball card, did that take off for stats wise for everyone being like, we'd better record everything, like historically speaking?
Well, I think that they gave prizes, like they did box scores in the newspapers. That's how I think that they went back.
Yeah, the box score was a big thing because if you know, you weren't there, that's how you saw who was good and who wasn't good.
Yeah, and I think that, I mean, still they had to go back and compile that stuff like much later in time. Like, so these guys knew like batting average, but they had no idea about like their own stats, I don't think. Like,
did they famously give Hack Wilson another RBI because they went back to all the stats and realized they counted wrong?
90 RBI in 1 year, and they went back and found an extra, which is so hilarious.
Yeah, 191. What a season. So when then I went down to Babe Ruth, you know, started reading articles about the Babe. Didn't mean to cut you off there, but Babe Ruth was a big, he wanted black players in Major League Baseball.
He did?
Yeah. He used to go on in the off season. They were called like barnstorming tours or whatever. Right. You'd go and they'd play exhibition games. Cause you know, baseball stopped at the Mississippi River in St. Louis, Missouri. That's where I was going with that. Like, I know my geography.
West. Yeah.
Yeah, so St. Louis was the furthest west, so they would go further out west, like going through all these small towns and stuff. And they, you know, they made good money. That's how a lot of these guys made money in the offseason, because pro ball players back then weren't breaking the bank. I mean, they did well. Babe did great, of course, but you know, he knew he was a big attraction, so you know, he went around and he would face these guys, because that was one of the knocks. When I remember, I was in a bar and I told someone, I'm like, no, to me, sorry, Babe Ruth's the greatest player ever. And someone said, yeah, he never faced black players though. And then I was like, damn it. You know what? That's a very good point. Because we were talking about Barry Bonds versus Babe Ruth. And then I thought about it, but this is what I would love to find out. I couldn't get the exact information. Maybe you're better at Google. Maybe one of the listeners, if you could find it, that'd be amazing. Send me the link. I'd love to read it. I want to know, Barry Bonds finished with 762 career home runs, I believe. And how many of those were off of black pitchers, though? You know?
Yeah, but the thing is, what if he faced Dwight Gooden and didn't hit a home run?
Yeah, it's a good point, too. Yeah, I guess he did face Dwight Gooden. He definitely faced Dwight Gooden. That's fair. My point was, though, so, you know, as a batter, though, when you're measuring offense, if you were to say, like, there were no black pitchers back then, it's like, well, there's not a whole lot right now either, is what my point is. I'm not taking anything away. Obviously, the game should have been integrated, and it would have been a better measure of how great Babe Ruth was. I only bring this up because as I was researching, it seemed like the Babe was a really good dude. And one of the things that made, this is kind of incredible a little bit, not incredible, but like, wow. In some interview, they talked about how they were talking to a Negro League player back then. And they said that Babe loved us, or not loved us, but like we all got along with Babe and he got along with us. Loved us, I guess is a good word, but that's not the quote the guy said. He said that when Babe first came along, they would call him the same mean things they called black people. You know what I mean? They called him like a big gorilla and they called him, you know, all that kind of horrible stuff. So Babe kind of just saw that as, well, I like them better than I like you. You know, because yeah, Babe was this orphan kid.
I know what Ty Cobb would call him.
Oh, yeah. No, yeah. Well, Ty Cobb hated Babe Ruth.
Yeah, Ty Cobb's also from Georgia and was
Georgia Peach. One of those things where it wasn't really a peach. You know, it's like when you call a fat guy tiny. That type of deal.
I think it's weird. Did no one freak out when he barnstormed with the Negro Leagues? Like,
He would stop in towns where there were mostly black populations.
Oh, because it's
so
just
they weren't freaking out. But and it was also Babe Ruth was larger than life, so people didn't. As I was reading these articles, I'll send you. I have the link to a couple of them, so I'll text them over to you. And I even researched it. It was the one blog or like story was written by a black guy, because it was like some super white dude being like, Babe was the best guy ever. Don't you talk about Babe like that? You know, there's some credibility issues, I suppose, right?
Sure. Yeah, I want to hear.
Well, a little bit. Not that, you know, and most of these, you know, journalists are get a, you know, people I feel like are being harder on journalists these days. So I don't want to just assume you can't be unbiased when writing about black and white relations just because you're a white guy. You know what I mean? I don't want to be that guy.
Right.
Right. Because I kind of hate that. Someone will look at an article going like, a man wrote this. How could a man know anything about a woman's feelings? Fuck this guy. And it's just like, I mean, he doesn't make a bad point though. You know, he's actually on your side. You just saw that his name was Mark and you were like, I don't like him. So I don't think that's helping anybody.
Outrage into my Babe Ruth stories just yet.
You got no outrage in your Babe Ruth stories yet?
I don't want much political outrage in my Babe Ruth stories.
Yeah. Well, if someone says to you, who's the greatest baseball player of all time, do you say Babe Ruth?
To the point that,
or do you not count that era?
It doesn't make sense to me, his numbers. And I've said this
right
in your podcast before. Like, I look at Jimmy Fox and I look at Lou Gehrig and I see athletes. I do not look at Babe Ruth and see an athlete. So it's very confusing to me why he was so good. And I'm sure that there's other factors in it in terms of the way that guys pitched. He had an upward swing when no one.
His swing was pretty.
You know, so I think that it was bad strategy to try to hit home runs before 1920 when they changed the balls, made the balls white. You know, they started outlawing spitballing. I think a lot of things went into it. But still, when guys like Jimmy Fox and Lou Gehrig were doing the same thing that Ruth was doing, they couldn't do it in the same way. And it still doesn't make sense to me. I would love to tell you that Willie Mays was the greatest of all time, or that Barry Bonds was the greatest of all time.
You can make an argument for Willie Mays though as being the best all around player of all time, because the Babe could not play defense like Willie Mays could.
Right.
You know,
I mean, so Willie Mays, you know, all around hitter and, I mean, fucking who knows if Mike Trout is the greatest player of all time.
Yeah, it might be when he's all said and done. I just think with Ruth, though, it's kind of what we talked about last week when we were talking about the Mount Rushmore movies, and we talked about how terrible the John Goodman Babe movie is. John Goodman was such an out-of-shape fat ass in that movie. Not to be a, you know, dick about people's weight, but he pushing 300 pounds in the movie? Babe Ruth, if you look at him, was 6'2", 225. That's not, you know what I mean? He had a small waist and a big, you know, torso. He was barrel chested. And you talked about the swing, right? He was the first one to adopt that uppercut swing that every player does now, that launch angle swing.
Right.
Because back then they would just, you know, hit the ball in the gap and all, hit them where they ain't. And that was just the style back then.
Around the turn of the century. I just don't see a situation where Bryce Harper goes up there and can take four steps towards the pitcher while he's delivering. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Well, that wasn't forever at bat though. Cause I was watching, there's a Babe Ruth documentary on on HBO Go right now. It's only an hour long. It's like Studs Terkel and a bunch of old writers talking about Babe Ruth and some guys that saw him. And I told you, I went down this whole Babe Ruth thing last night, or two nights ago, was it? I don't know. Sometime this week. And in it, you see this swing you're talking about, where he kind of like Happy Gilmore's there, where he takes like a stride or two, like almost full like sideways steps, like you would in softball.
Yeah.
And then you see the swing where he's actually like in the box. It almost reminded me of kind of like Kyle Schwarber's swing, to be honest with you.
Yeah, I could see that.
Where it had this kind of like, you know, bring the hands back and then almost go down, and then it's like you're swinging a club.
I think I saw Brian Kenny do a side by side with Harper, and it's like that sort of violence in the swing. And yeah, I would guess Schwarber is
It was. It's this real, like, what's it called? Central. I can't say the word. Centrical force. I can't say that word to save my life right now. you know what I'm talking about, right? A golfer has the same thing with the swing, where it's almost like this. What is it?
Centrifugal force.
Centrifugal. Like, you know what I'm saying? But it's just like a real wraparound type of thing.
Yeah, yeah.
It's like when you that's why they actually say little kids will have good golf swings because their center of gravity is real low, and then they can create this real whipping motion with the top to bottom part of the golf swing type thing.
Pork.
Yeah, a hockey slap shot does the same deal. So I don't know. I think the reason I give it to Ruth, despite the era not being integrated, was because I wanted to research it, and the players at the time were all the Negro League players at the time were all big fans of his. Were like, this guy's amazing. So even, you know, they kind of recognized it, where not too many of them were like, oh, this guy couldn't face us. You know, it wasn't like that type of deal. So I'm imagining he would have been great regardless, you know. And also the sheer dominance he had over the next players in the league. He had more home runs than entire teams one season.
Yeah, it's
That's insane. That would be the equivalent of a 275 home run season. I think the Brewers led the National League with like 200 something home runs last year. You know, it's that's nuts.
I mean, he completely changed the way that baseball was played. He completely changed baseball strategy. I mean, and it would be like if
Will Chamberlain in basketball is similar, where rules had to be changed because of him.
Absolutely, like Lou Alcindor in the NCAA, you know what I mean? Like when they dunks for a while, you know, like he was so integral to baseball completely changing from a constant motion, like the pitcher was just a way to get the ball in play. So guys run around the bases and steal bases, and it was very
fast. It was a fast moving game.
Right. And guys didn't have gloves. It was just insane. And I've talked about this 2 years ago, I think, that when Babe Ruth played at the Polo Grounds, they didn't have foul poles, because why the fuck would they have a foul pole, right? So they had a rope. They started making ropes that would go up the bleachers for Babe Ruth, and they decided that the ball had to land on the fair side of the rope. So how many home runs did Babe Ruth hook around where the pole would have been that landed foul in the Polo Grounds bleachers in that bathtub of a stadium? So they think that Babe Ruth in 1920, or whenever he hit 59 home runs or whatever it was, that he might have hit like 100 home runs that year.
Yeah, there's a book. Someone wrote a book about
that. The year Babe Ruth hit 150 home runs or some crazy ass shit.
Something like that. I know. I want to check out that book, because it talks about that book was referenced in a couple of the articles I read about Babe Ruth's barnstorming tours.
Right. Right.
So yeah, I want to check that book out. It's just interesting. I really hope they make another Babe Ruth movie down the road, one that does him justice. Because the way these old writers were talking about him, and him just being this larger-than-life figure, and then they showed footage from his funeral, and it was this event.
Right.
Like, the streets were just flooded. I mean, lines down, miles down New York City blocks of people just wanting to, you know, see Babe Ruth, just to see the casket of this guy. You know, I mean, they call Yankee Stadium, well, not the new one, but the old one, the house Ruth built. Because he was just breaking so many attendance records, like, we need a bigger stadium.
I think it's almost insane that they tore that down.
I do too. What a bummer. I'm mad I never got to see that one. I got to get out to Fenway before, although I don't think Fenway's going anywhere.
Fenway,
they got too good a setup.
But like, I've been to both Yankee stadiums, and I got to say, like, I think it's fucking insane that they, I mean, they have a baseball diamond there. But I mean, come on.
I've been to the new one. I didn't notice the baseball diamond, though. I must have been on the other side of where I entered.
I mean, it's just right where it was. The Polo Grounds don't exist either. It's like, nobody gave a shit. You know what I mean? Like, the Polo Grounds are like an apartment complex. Come on, man.
I know, that's tragic. You think about all the stuff that gets landmarked, where it's like, you're going to landmark that piece of shit, but you're not going to landmark this I mean, it's not that.
I think somebody should put up a statue at the home of the West Side Grounds or wherever the fucking Cubs played in 1908.
I'm cool with that too. I think
just a statue of like.
I mean, obviously we're biased because we're baseball fans, but to me, there's significance to any stadium or any place where people gather that way. You know, like a legendary concert halls. I would be like, throw up a statue there for when they tear down the Metro one day. I don't know.
The reason that the Coliseum still exists is for religious reasons. They were convinced that Christians were martyred there, and that's why it exists as like a religious thing. Otherwise, the fucking Roman Coliseum would be gone.
Yeah, there are some bastards out there doing terrible city planning. You know what I mean? Tearing down these monuments of human glory.
And yet we got to have a fucking statue of a Confederate general. I don't want to get into that.
Oh, yeah. All right. Well, yeah. So I still go with Babe Ruth. You're right. There's something about it where it's just like, what was this guy? You know, that the numbers are freakish. He had was a career 340 hitter. Would walk 160 times a year. The thing about him too is he had 714 home runs, right? Both Hank Aaron, who finished with like 40 more home runs or something, 755 minus 714, yeah. And 762 by Bonds. Both of those guys have well over 2,000 more at bats. I'm saying at bats, not plate appearances. At bats, plate appearances it's like 2,500 for each one of them, I think, if not more.
I mean, there's an argument to be made that Ruth played a much easier schedule.
That's true. Again, I said earlier, never went west of the Mississippi.
Right, and played against the same pitchers all the time with, like, whatever. He only played, like, what, 8 teams or some shit?
That's true. So you get more familiar with pitchers and stuff. But I just think anyone who – when I compare – and I do this with all sports. When you're comparing greatness, and, you know, it's everyone always wants to do Barry Bonds versus Babe Ruth or, you know, Michael Jordan, LeBron. That's a big argument nowadays. And that one's easier to do, though, because you have footage on both of them. And with Jordan, I know this is a baseball podcast, Jordan overlaps the current generation because he played as a 40-year-old with the Wizards against, you know, Tim Duncan, who just retired, but Kevin Garnett and guys who overlap generations.
Right.
So you could say, all right, wow, Jordan did this against Dirk Nowitzki, and so-and-so, who's considered a star today, did terrible against that guy. So I actually use that a lot. Sean Marion, Jordan, when he was 40 years old, torched Sean Marion. He hit a game-winning shot regular season in his face at the buzzer against Phoenix, and then in an all-star game, would have been a game-winning shot if someone didn't foul Kobe on the other line, and Kobe ended up hitting free throws to win that all-star game. But Jordan owned him as a 40-year-old. And then LeBron James is a 26-year-old against Dallas in the finals. Sean Marion shut LeBron down. So I always kind of go, well, that's the guy. Sean Marion's your one guy who guarded both of them. And he had an easier time guarding a 26-year-old LeBron.
So, that's such small sample size.
It is, but it's basketball and it's a one-on-one. It's not one-on-one completely. You know what I mean? But I don't like when there are new NBA fans. I see them online. And again, we'll get back to baseball.
Hey, but hold on. I saw Mike Bridenstine at Chuck in 2006 and he killed. And I saw Kilgall in there in 2005 and he had a soft set.
That's completely different. You can't compare comedy to LeBron was 26. That's your prime. A basketball player's prime. Is
Bridenstine.
In 2005, I was 19 and not doing comedy. Or how old was I in 2005? I would have been 20, 21. So, slightly different. I'm not saying it was an 18-year-old. If it was an 18-year-old LeBron, because that was funny. Jordan's last season as a 40-year-old was the year before LeBron came on as an 18-year-old.
You were 18 in 2005?
No, I'm saying, no, I was 20, 21. In 2005, I turned 21 in September of that year. So, most of the year, I was 20. I was born in 84. I'm saying that Jordan... I don't know why we're getting into Jordan. This is my own fault. I just was talking about when people compare eras. They do this in football. Dick Butkus, Ray Lewis, who's the better overall linebacker?
Well,
stuff like that, just, you know.
I just always think like, who's better, Jesse Owens or Usain Bolt?
Well, the thing with track is you got time, so you could see who ran it faster based on
what
the time.
If they didn't.
What if they didn't have time?
Yeah. What if there's no footage on Jesse Owens?
And but. But then they record the time to know who won? Oh, or they just
have a ribbon.
Just a race.
Just a ribbon.
Just a ribbon. Well, then I would assume Usain Bolt was faster because of human nature. You know what I mean?
And people, what about, like, oh, what, he didn't have Nazi, he wasn't in Nazi Germany. He didn't, like, grow up with, like, I mean, you.
Well, no, I get those points, but my all this is what I was going to lead into.
Throwing out the window and just be like, everything is better now.
Yes, of course. Everything is better now. But when I compare greatness, I want to look at how you did in your era. It's like one of the measuring tools that Bill James used for Hall of Fame.
OPS.
How were OPS. You in your era?
Yeah.
Because Babe Ruth was so dominant in his era. I like to believe that if Babe Ruth was born in 1990 and was a 27-year-old, 28-year-old playing in today's game, he would still be a freak of nature. You know what I mean? Because that's just, if your greatness is greatness, and it'll go across the thing. Now, obviously, there are people who compare eras and they think, you mean to tell me Babe Ruth in the 20s would be good today? I'm like, no, because why would Babe Ruth in the 20s be playing in the teens today? You know, that doesn't make sense. I'm going back to a time machine, but I'm not giving him the advantages of knowing that you shouldn't eat hot dogs for breakfast.
Oh yeah, he wouldn't be able to catch up with the velocity that they have now at all
from the 20s. No, of course not, because guys were throwing what in the mid 80s then, and they throw in the high 90s now. But I'm saying, if he were born the same year Bryce Harper was born, he would have came along facing that comp. You rise to your competition,
right?
Certain great athletes do, and that's why I don't like it when I always feel like Gale Sayers gets overlooked in football when they talk about the greatest running backs of all time, because he only played six seasons. And I go, yeah, but the knee injury that ended Gale Sayers' career was, if he had it today, he'd be back in a week or two.
Right.
You know what I mean? Because technology is so much better now. Like, guys used to play basketball in Converse All-Stars in shitty shoes that would break ankles if they played in them today.
I want to see.
So when I compare eras, I want to see
Babe Ruth in 98 with steroids.
Yeah. I mean, he'd be a freak. That's why I do like that baseball has that stat, ERA plus,
right,
or OPS plus, because it compares eras and how good you were to the era. And, you know, I mean, that really shows how special a player is. I wish other sports would do that a little bit. Because basketball
is my favorite sport, is because they have stats like this and they can't really figure it out for other. I mean, I can tell you, like, park adjusted, era adjusted, how he compares pretty closely with other people, I think.
Yeah.
You can't really do that. They're probably going to figure it out, but.
Well, exactly. And even when you bring up, like, the velocity, like they said, Walter Johnson, who pitched in Babe Ruth's era, they said he threw 80 in that documentary Fastball, which is good. It's on Netflix. I highly recommend it. They said he threw 85 or 84, 85, something like that.
I thought they changed the movie, though.
What'd they change?
They start the movie by saying, like, Nolan Ryan threw this and Walter Johnson threw this. And then at the end of the movie, they readjust it. And they're like, no, Walter Johnson was closer to 100. Nolan Ryan threw like 114 or something crazy.
Oh, really? You know what's funny? Now that you mention it, I don't think I saw the end of the documentary. So right now.
Last week when you talked about it, I was like, oh, Joe, I don't think saw the end of the documentary.
I did not see the end. I think I saw like 3/4 of it. I saw the whole thing of Knuckleball.
They bury the lead, and they make you think, well, fuck, Walter Johnson threw 88. Oh my God, my whole idea of that era is ruined. And then they come back in, and scientists are like, here's the problem: is you start the radar gun with XYZ, he actually threw, and then they do that at the end of the movie.
So maybe Ruth probably would have caught up with the velocity then.
I don't know if he hit Walter Johnson, to be honest. I don't know how he did against
the Yeah, defense. I don't. Yeah, good point. Well, I was going to say this. The point I was going to make was, if you're hitting the ball 500 feet off of an 85 mile an hour fastball, that's impressive, you know?
Yeah, I don't know if I'd be doing that.
Yeah, because, you know, they say a lot of times it's the power that does. I mean, obviously, you have to generate bat speed to catch up to it. But I knew from playing baseball that I liked guys who threw hard, because I knew if I got a piece of it, it was going to go farther.
Yeah,
where, you know, with a hanging curveball, you really have to get some torque into it to really jack it, you know.
Yeah, but I think that while you were talking, I was just like, crack, everything just shuts down because you can just give a number. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah, yeah.
Who's better, Carl Lewis or Usain Bolt? You can just go Bolt, and then you can just go, here is a number.
Yeah.
And baseball
is nice.
Yeah, that baseball is similar but more complicated. Whereas they can't really do that with football or basketball or, to my knowledge, hockey. Even though I don't know.
Really, well, football and basketball are both interesting because those two sports have had, over the last 10, maybe not 10 years in basketball, but definitely the last 5 or 6 in basketball, maybe 5 to 7, it's become a 3-point league. It's become a big shooters league, and centers don't play into it as much. And the pace of play has gotten a lot faster because of defensive, you know, you can't hand check anymore. And I'm not hating on today's NBA. I think it's great. I'm back to a big LeBron James fan. I just think Michael Jordan's still better because the statistics are overall better. Jordan faced guys who had been great in the last 5 to 6 years, and Tim Duncan, Kevin Garnett, and Dirk Nowitzki, and a few other, and Kobe, and did well against them as an old man. So I think Jordan is a 28-year-old in his prime would do pretty fucking good in any era. You know what I mean? But I just get upset.
Also, Jordan is a psycho, and he would have made sure that he beat LeBron in the finals.
Yes, he's an absolute sociopath. We're very lucky. There was some podcast that talked about it once where they're like, we're very lucky Michael Jordan chose basketball as his thing to unleash his psychotic nature on, because if he decided to be the best serial killer in the world, he would have been the best serial killer in the world. Like, that's just the kind of mindset that nutbag had. But like, back to the athlete thing, athletes are all definitely better in today's world. That's just human evolution. So I almost think when you compare track, I'm just thinking of this now. That's why we're going longer on the subject than I probably would have wanted to. I think it's interesting though. No, because I wanted to get into some other stuff, some other fun stuff. I wanted to keep the podcast closer to an hour. Last week we were an hour and a half, but we missed each other. Is that,
yeah, yeah.
I don't think, so say, I don't know, I'm making up this number. Say Carl Lewis's record was 9 seconds flat. I don't know.
Right.
I'm just saying 9 seconds. And then, you know, Usain Bolt beats that and he's at 8.7. And everyone's like, oh my God, fastest man ever. He beat it by 0.3. This is insane, 8.7. I would agree. I'm like, that's nuts. He's unbelievable. But if you took Carl Lewis and brought him into today's world and gave him better shoes and better, you know, all this other stuff and everything we know about sports medicine and training and all that stuff, is it that impressive that he barely beat him? You know what I mean?
It's so funny. Jerry Seinfeld actually has a great bit where he's like, he puts his head forward slightly and he goes, fastest man in the world, greatest of all time. And then he moves his head slightly back and he goes, never heard of him.
Yeah, exactly. It's so, yeah, because those guys, these are the fastest 8 guys in the world running in the Olympics, and number 6 you'll never hear of his name. You have no idea. This is the 6th fastest man on the planet. You have no idea who the hell he is. That is
right.
Yeah, Seinfeld is a lot of people like to dog him because of the simple observational style of his material, but he definitely has some good bits, some great bits.
Oh yeah,
I think my favorite Seinfeld joke is this is sports related. He talks about the Special Olympics. He goes, so what do you think the parking's like at the Special Olympics? You know, they just cram 100 cars into those 2 spots. It's a really funny joke. Anyway, though, it sounds like it'd be mean spirited, but it's not. It's just a play on the fact that every parking lot only has 2 handicap spots. And all right. So let's switch gears now, though. Oh, no, my last thing I was going to say, though, just because the athletes are better, I don't know if that makes them better players. You know what I mean? Because there's a lot of guys right now. I think the 30th best guy in the league right now is probably a better athlete than, say, you know, Magic Johnson or Scottie Pippen or a lot of guys, even. A lot of greats. You're going to be – guys. Zach LaVine on the Bulls is an amazing athlete. He's not a good player, though. He's okay.
Right. Bo Jackson was a great athlete, not the best player. Yasiel Puig, amazing athlete, not the best player.
Yeah, totally. Kevin Durant, to me, is maybe the – as a top 5 NBA player, definitely, maybe top 3, you could even argue. When he's on, he might be the best when he's on, because in the finals, he was incredible last year. But I don't consider him a top – I wouldn't have him in my top 50 NBA athletes. He's not that athletic.
No,
he's got great agility.
Who's a better athlete than Nate Robinson?
Yeah, it's a good point. Couldn't he play professional soccer, they said?
I mean, he yeah, sure. I don't know. He could have probably been like an NFL player. Have you ever seen a picture of Nate Robinson as a little kid with his shirt off?
No. Was he like a 12-pack or something insane?
Dude looked like Schwarzenegger as like a baby.
Yeah, that dude could, he could body. I remember the one play when he went to block LeBron. He like took LeBron down with him. It's a good gif actually of him coming up. He blocks LeBron's shot and LeBron, it was a clean block, completely clean. And LeBron looked up like, did I just get stuffed by like Joakim Noah because of the force in which I got taken down? And he looked up, it was Nate Robinson. Even he had no choice but to smile like, all right, you got me.
It's like he was a jarringly muscular child.
Yeah. Wow. I'm going to have to, you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to Google Nate Robinson childhood pictures as a creep. That's what I'm going to do later. I don't know if I want that on my search engine. Okay, so I leave the computer open. My wife comes home. So let's switch to what we talked about, the Mount Rushmore movies. So I told you, I don't know if we all right, now I'm going to have to tell the listeners. We tried to record and then it failed. So I don't know if that got across when we talked about Bull Durham. You don't like anything being automatically called the best of anything. So that's where your discrepancy with Bull Durham comes in.
I think Bull Durham is a good movie. I just don't like it that everybody said it was number one.
I hear you on that. That bothers me a little bit. I could get on board with that train of thought because people overhype stuff. And then you're just like, all right, shut up about it. You know, I almost got there with the movie Get Out because that came out right around the time my wife was like due any day. So I wasn't going to see the movie. And everybody just wouldn't shut up about it. So I was like, the movie's probably going to suck. Fuck this movie. And then I saw it like 8 months later after the hype had died down, which I was glad because if I would have saw it maybe a month or two after it came out, I might not have enjoyed it the same way. But I saw it like 8 months later or 10 months later, and I loved it because it was the annoying people's voices were out of my head. So I get what you're saying with that. But Bull Durham was on the consensus, though. There was three. When I asked for the Mount Rushmore, it's funny, I asked for Mount Rushmore. Several people would give me five movies. Several people would give me two movies. I'm like, do we not know what the fuck Mount Rushmore is? It's four. You choose four. But the consensus was Major League, Bull Durham, Field of Dreams. Those three were named the most. Moneyball made a lot of appearances.
Yeah.
And A League of Their Own actually was in a lot. If I did votes, I think A League of Their Own might have been. That would have rounded up to four. I was surprised, actually, how much people liked A League of Their Own. Actually, not surprised. That was a great movie. But maybe I was surprised based on the dudes who had said they like A League of Their Own.
Yeah.
Because some of the guys, see, it goes to show you really can't judge people on certain things. And I think we read too much into labeling people because there were some dudes where I just think to myself, like, really? You like League of Their Own? I would have thought you'd been one of those guys with women don't play baseball, you know?
Do you like it or are you just naming a movie?
No, I don't think these dudes aren't like that. I mean, these guys aren't
guarantee you some people just participated and be like, I can name four baseball movies.
Oh, that's fair. That's fair. But I thought you were saying that were some of these guys saying A League of Their Own to make themselves look good.
Of course.
Well, here's the thing. I know the people were commenting, and I don't think these guys – look, you're thinking of the dudes who say I'm a feminist just so they could bang a feminist chick. These aren't those dudes. You know what I mean? These aren't those guys. Like, so, but no, League of Their Own's a great movie. It doesn't matter what walk of life you're from. You're gonna enjoy that flick. I just think of lately a League of Their Own. If you would have asked me 5 years ago, I would have guessed most people would have had a League of Their Own in their top, maybe not top, definitely top four or five. Actually, what am I saying? But now with everything being so polarizing, to say a movie that's about women and being a dude, it's like, wow, he's one of the good ones. Like, I don't think, you know, I think the average person still doesn't think that way, but we live in a comedy bubble where everything is so, you know, hey, his favorite movies were all white guys. He must hate Hispanics or his, you know, he doesn't like Jews. He didn't name a single Jewish person among his favorite comedians, you know, all that kind of shit.
Anyway. Was there, how much love was there for 42?
42 got a lot of likes, actually. 42, and there was some movies that got thrown in there where I'm like, damn, I didn't even think of that one. And by the way, Wilson Contreras almost had an inside the park home run.
What was the biggest sleeper that we did not talk about?
Cobb got mentioned several times, actually.
Oh, Cobb, wow! With let me
just go to the. We got technology going our way.
I called him Lee Harvey Oswald. Who's the guy I'm thinking of? Who played Cobb? Who was roommates with Al Gore at Harvard?
Tommy Lee Jones?
Lee Harvey Oswald. That's what I said.
You just three names. And the Lee was the only part of the name you got right. Okay, you know, 61 got a lot of love. And 8 Men Out. Those two we slept on. See, people really liked 61.
Wow.
And Sandlot, obviously. Sandlot was named a lot.
So 61 asterisk And Cobb. Okay.
All right, I'll name some people. Aaron Nadell, I think that's how you say his last name. He said Major League, League of Their Own, Field of Dreams, The Natural. He
oh,
said leaving.
Fuck, The Natural, dude.
Yeah, dude.
The Natural. Roy Hobbs, Wonder Boy. Holy fuck, I can't believe I forgot that. I own that movie. That is a tremendous movie.
Yeah, I got to watch it again. It's one of those movies I only saw once when I was very young, and now it's I got to check it out again.
Story about a member of the Chicago Cubs, believe it or not.
Really, now?
About a psycho shooting him. A psychotic stalker.
Oh, okay. Here we go. Let me go with some other ones. Oh, he said leaving Bull Durham out feels criminal, but it's a tough field, so he'd leave Bull Durham out. Nathan Timmel, who's a comedian out of Iowa, wrote Moneyball, Bull Durham, Field of Dreams, definitely those three. And then he said that he had to throw Major League in there to make his fourth.
Okay.
Clark Jones said you stayed away for the first hour of Moneyball, which I didn't care for that comment, Clark, because I thought Moneyball was awesome. This other dude, Dame James, I can't say your last name, or Field of Dreams, For the Love of the Game he had in there. I was surprised to see that. Sandlot, League of Their Own. This dude, Matt Simonson, you're going to like his answer. He wrote a Cubs World Series movie.
Nice.
Joey Villagomez wrote Sandlot, Moneyball, Major League, League of Their Own. See, a lot of League of Their Owns. This dude wrote Cobb 61, something called Bingo Long, which I've never seen, and The Natural.
Oh, you got to see The Natural.
Oh, you know what?
I'm so mad.
Here's a movie I slept on. I got to see The Natural again. Yeah. Here's a movie I slept on. It was a HBO movie that I actually had a special order for VHS because my dad sells a VCR DVD combo. This is like 5 years ago. I special ordered this called Long Gone with William Peterson and Dylan Mulroney, I think, and Virginia Madsen. It's about a minor league baseball team. And it was one of those movies specially made for HBO in like the late 80s, mid to late 80s. And it's fantastic. It's a
no one had
William Peterson stars in it. It's a really funny movie.
No one had Tom Selleck in Japan.
Nobody had Mr. Baseball. No. You know what, though? So we're going to work on this a little bit right now because I only thought about it earlier today and didn't have enough time to text you so you could put your thoughts into it. And thanks, everybody, for commenting on your the baseball movies you liked a lot. Oh, Bad News Bears made a late push, by the way.
Oh, Bad News Bears. Yeah.
And then Mark Geary wrote the Naked Gun scene where Leslie Nielsen's the umpire, which is fantastic, actually.
Classic.
So, all right, moving on to this. I wanted to make a fictional, my all fictional movie characters for a baseball team. So, for example, okay. Willie Mays Hayes is my leadoff hitter playing center field.
Oh, boy.
Right?
Okay.
Marla Hooch was the second baseman who was the ugly woman in League of Their Own with a lot of power. She's going to play second and bat second for me, actually.
Oh, man. There's no, you did not.
I just
have prep. And so I'm going to say my entire starting lineup is the 1990 team that Mr. Burns puts together for the Simpsons.
Oh, see, you went on that one. I wasn't thinking of TV shows, dude. And that's not fictional, though, because those were real players. It's got to be fake. Not, I don't know if I have Marla Hooch band second, though. That's actually pretty stupid on my end. But like, you know, what position was the toughest for fictional catcher? Cause there's a lot of good fictional catchers.
Well, the Bull Durham catcher,
yeah.
Is Costner.
Yeah.
Right?
Kevin Costner and Bull Durham was a great catcher.
Got what's his face? I can't think. I mean, you should
say
I
might get the great Hambino.
The catcher from Major League has got to be.
He is.
Answer.
He's my starter. Jake Taylor. You know why? Cause he's a former all-star. Where my Kevin Costner's character never made was in the show for only 3 weeks. Had a cup of coffee in the show. So
my first baseman is Lou Gehrig from the Pride of the Yankees.
I just told you can't be real people, man.
Who's have you met Lou Gehrig?
But he existed. You know what I mean? He's not like Jesus where you're like, was he real? You know what I mean? We have video of Lou Gehrig's you know what I mean? he's got grandchildren alive still, I think. they knew him, so he definitely was a thing. Lou Gehrig.
Really?
Okay. I like the idea of me and you being drunk at a bar where you're like, okay, this guy thinks Lou Gehrig was a real thing. Come on, dude.
I'm a Lou Gehrig birther.
Yeah, I got some wind to sell you. So first base was tough. I like Neil Flynn's character in Rookie of the Year. Seemed like a solid first baseman, a good glove man. You got Bernie Mac in Mr. 3000 was the first baseman. Tom Selleck and Mr. Baseball was the first baseman.
Oh, my God.
So first base was tough. Roy Hobbs.
So you did.
I might have
did some reason.
As my pitcher though, because didn't Roy Hobbs pitch mostly, or did he play the outfield?
Well, Roy Hobbs was a pitcher, I thought. Then he got shot, and then he comes back with Wonder Boy. I think Roy Hobbs, you should think of as like a hitter.
So I put him in like, maybe I'll put him in right field. I think I got to go Pedro Serrano from Major League and left. So I got two Indians from the movie Major League and center in the outfield, center and left for them. I'll put Roy Hobbs in right field.
That is a strong outfield.
Yeah. Benny the Jet Rodriguez is my pinch runner late in games.
Well, your pitcher's got to be the kid from Rookie of the Year.
Yeah. I think I have to go with him. He's throwing like 103. But then, you know, there's some other great pitchers in there. You've got Channing Tatum. You've got what's her name from, her last name's Tatum. What's her name? From Bad News Bears. Shit.
Oh, Tatum O'Neal.
Thank you. Channing Tatum.
Channing Tatum O'Neal.
Yeah, Channing Tatum O'Neal. Or you've got Nuke LaLoosh from Bull Durham. He ended up going to the show.
About the reliever. You got Charlie Sheen.
Oh, he's my closer for sure. Wild Thing's my closer.
Yeah.
So other people give suggestions, you know, send us some messages throughout the week.
Oh, that's a fun game. I got to look into
this. We'll do. We'll have a definitive answer. We're going to do our starting nine next week. I just want to do a little teaser preview of it right now. We could go 1 through 9 next week. Also, great catcher, Gina Davis in A League of Their Own, although only played one season, though. So it's hard to pick her over Jake Taylor.
Jake Taylor is my – that's
her.
That's my
Jake right Taylor there. Would do anything to win. He laid down a bunt, and it was a great play, a bunt and run. No one saw that coming. Infield was back. Nope. Genius. Also, though – Gina Davis, though, even though it was that one season, her WAR was like a 7 as a catcher. She was unbelievable, man.
That's a hard thing to do, to have a 7 WAR as a catcher. That's like Gary Carter numbers from the early 80s.
I mean, did Buster Posey ever get up that high, or was he more like 5-6?
I mean, maybe.
Maybe in his MVP year. I wonder what Maurer's top year was. All right, well, let's talk about the first week of the Major League Baseball season. What surprised you the most, Mike Bryanstein?
Oh, good question. I'm going to say how none of the teams other than the Astros that are supposed to be good are good.
Well, the Red Sox are 7-1.
Oh, I mean,
next to the Red Sox and Astros, you mean?
Not the division favorite.
Oh, I thought you meant. Oh, I get what you're saying now.
None of them are in the lead. the Red Sox pitching is better than I thought, so that is a surprise, or it's looking that way.
Yeah, they're talking about David Price reinventing himself. He looked real good. And Chris Sale always starts off hot.
Yeah, that's going to be a great thing for them if they got David Price. I think the Pirates are pretty surprising. I think that the Dodgers sucking is surprising. And no one's talking about the Indians at all. I haven't heard one word about the Indians, who a lot of people thought were the best team in baseball last year. And so that is surprising. Yeah, I think that, I mean, they're playing games in 27-degree weather. We can't really judge
it. It is tough to judge, you know. It's one of those things where, as a Cub fan, I was like, hey, they're opening in Miami, and then Cincinnati's weather's not too bad, but they ended up missing a game there. And now we got lucky to get 4 games in a dome. And opening day at Wrigley tomorrow is supposed to be 38 degrees and snowing. So I'm imagining that game's not going to happen. And I'm supposed to go to the game with my buddy. I'm actually hoping they cancel it, because Tuesday looks like it might be 48, 49. Which after 38 and snowing is going to feel like 60. So I'd rather go to that game on Tuesday.
Fun fact, the Cubs are the only team to not have a home game yet.
Oh, really? Opening 10 on the road. Wow, that's something.
Yeah.
So if they win today, they'll be 5-4. Assume they could have won that second game in Cincinnati. They got canceled. They could have had a 6-4 road trip to start the year.
Well, they won that 17-game inning game.
Yeah,
too.
Good Lord. Yeah, I mean, you're not thrilled with that, given the competition. You'd rather have had them be like 7-3 coming home. Obviously, the one was rained out, so you'd rather have 6-3, I guess. But you'll take a winning record coming back this early in the year. And I think the biggest surprise has to be, to me, Shohei Ohtani, or Ohtani, however you say his name. I've got to learn it one of these days. I got to learn it. I do. This is embarrassing. I mean, you know, I do a weekly baseball podcast. It's fun to get names wrong, but sometimes it's like, dude, come on.
Will you say his name one more time?
Shohei Ohtani. Ohtani.
Okay. Joe thinks his name is Shoponi Baloney.
Shoponi Baloney. His start has been fantastic. He pitched a quality start his first game. And then as a DH, he's got 3 home runs on the season.
Yeah, three games in a row.
Yeah, and it's incredible because of how terrible he was in the spring.
That is That is a great story about how just how I think I mean like just how bad he was in spring training, but they'll figure out how to pitch him. Like if you remember the start Eric Thames got last year.
Oh yeah. Yeah, he was 15 home runs in April or something insane.
Yeah, they immediately figured out what to do and kind of shut him down, although he seems to be doing okay right now.
Yeah, he's off to a solid start now, and he still had good overall numbers. But, yeah, of course, you weren't going to – I think he finished with 27 home runs, which is compared to the start he had. He definitely tailed off. Yeah, they'll figure him out. They'll find a weakness in his strike zone. They'll exploit a hole in his swing or something.
A lot of people think that the upside is still on the mound and he might be the best pitching prospect in the past 15 years or something like that. But yeah, man, I'm all for seeing this happen. I want to see a stud pitcher be a stud hitter and vice versa. That sounds great to me.
Yeah. I mean, well, it's like the movie, The Natural, or like Babe Ruth. It'd be a cool thing if we, maybe it'll be a new, the game is always changing, or all sports are always changing. You know, the NFL is a passing league now. It was a running game, 15, 20 years ago, and basketball with the three-pointer being like huge. Maybe we'll start to see, I mean, we're already seeing versatility being more valued than ever before in baseball, which is great, I think. So maybe we'll start to see down the road, if you're a stud pitcher, because a lot of stud pitchers in high school were also stud hitters. They just went on to the minors or to college and stopped hitting. Because they're like, you're a pitcher. Don't even worry about it, you know?
And in fairness, I don't want to act like we don't know that Hunter Green exists in the Philly system.
Yeah, no, he's still 19, 20? He's young, though, right?
Right.
He's a few years away.
Yeah, and Otani's 22.
I think he turned 23 during March. So I might be wrong. Maybe he's 22. Either way, 22, 23 is not that big a difference. But, no, it's incredible. I like to see it. It's something new and exciting.
Especially on that team with the greatest player in the world and a team that, living out, it's like when the White Sox are good and when you're on the North side and you're kind of like, all right.
Oh, yeah. So when the Angels get good out in LA, my voice just cracked. Do you start to see some more halos, some more people like some jumping on the bandwagon?
I saw a Mike Trout jersey on a kid yesterday and I was like, okay, that's cool. Kids like baseball, then I'm all for it. You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah, definitely. I just am curious to see Socha get him the at-bats. Is he going to DH three times a week and then start? How many starts in a week is he going to get?
I think that he's going to get as far as DHing goes, I think he gets the day before he pitches off and the day after he pitches off.
Okay, so... five starts right there. So he'll start three out of five games in a five-game stretch.
But they're going to escalate that. Like, they're going to slow start him like this for a while, and then eventually he's going to hit for himself.
So, because they have the choice. They don't have to DH him.
Right.
Where is the DH going? Are we going to get it now? Isn't it the point where it's like, let's just have it already?
I mean, you could make the argument that they pay if Clayton Kershaw goes to a National League team spending $400 million on Kershaw, who is in decline. But whoever they pay that type of money to, they're not going to necessarily, they're going to be like, can we not have this guy on the fucking base path?
Yeah. I mean, because you're investing that much into him, you'd hate to see a freak injury like that one time Mark Pryor and Marcus Giles collided into each other back in 2003. Remember that one?
Yeah. I mean, I don't know. Like, you could make the argument that, like, hey, man, you pay fucking Bryce Harper X amount and he has to go on the bases too.
Yeah, that's fair. But, like, nobody, it's one of those things where Trevor Bauer, the Indians pitcher who likes to run his mouth,
oh, drone finger?
Yeah, he kind of went nuts. Not went nuts, but he went off, I should say, in a post-game conference last night talking about how he doesn't like Manfred's new speed-up-the-game policy. He goes, I don't get enough time to warm up in between innings. I'm afraid I'm going to get injured, and that's why I gave up that home run because I wasn't loose. It's hard, to get loose, and I hate all these stupid speeding-up-the-game things and blah, blah, blah.
It's his pre-game ritual, Trevor Bauer?
Yeah, right? I don't know.
He showed it during the World Series 2 years ago, and he does like 25 different bizarre calisthenics exercises. Like he's out there with swimming pool.
And he still needs to get loose in between innings. Shut up then. I have no sympathy for you. And it's also getting annoying because in every other sport, they make changes almost every season. Baseball, they make one little change every now and then, and all the players freak out about it.
I mean, did kickers go crazy when they changed the field goal? They should have.
They absolutely should have, but they didn't. You know what I mean? I don't know. It's just like, look, the game needs to evolve a little bit. The mound got lowered in the 60s. People got over that. DH got added to one league. People got over that. And I hate it when people are like, no, I like the game the way it is. And I go, well, you know, the game wasn't one DH on one side and one on the other. That's what kills me. It's either no DH or both DH. And you know the players' union will never allow them to get rid of the DH because it's a high-paid position. So why not bring it to both leagues? If I'm in the players' union, which, by the way, they're going to fire Tony Clark because he's done a terrible job recently. So whoever they get in to be the new head of the players' union, if I'm the players, I'm like, listen, you could give them a stupid little pitch clock, but or, you know, maybe they don't want the pitch clock, but we'll cave on a couple of these speed up the game things, but you're giving us the DH in the NL because that'll help player salaries. Because now
trade clock for DH because you're not going to have as many fucking pitching changes in the National League if you have a DH.
Exactly. And then it'll make it a little quicker. You know what I mean? And then if I'm a player like say Anthony Rizzo, who's 28 now, dealing with a bad back right now, I still think it's not that big a deal. It's just been cold lately. So they're like, sit out. It's fine. It's early. But Anthony Rizzo at age 32, back starts to be aching. You think he wants to play first base all the time? When he's a free agent at 31, 32, he's going to want American League. He's going to want it to be. If what I'm trying to say is, I can't talk, dude. I'm such a moron today. But anyway, you get more teams competing for your services. Like when Prince Fielder signed with the Tigers that year, he signed for like, people thought he was going to get, because he was like 27 at the time, 28. People thought, oh, he might get like 220 million or something like that, 280 or 250 or whatever. He ended up getting still a great paycheck, don't get me wrong, but it was about 30 million, 40 million less than he thought because he only had American League teams bidding on him. So if I'm a player like that, I would have been like, man, wouldn't it have been great if 15 other teams could have tried to assign me?
Sure.
That was my point on that. I don't know why I couldn't spit that out.
I mean, there's things I
drink some water while I do this.
There's things about National League strategy that I love.
I do too.
I'm accustomed to. I don't know if I do love it. There's a lot of minutia baseball things that I think most people like would hate. That I'm like, no, it's part of the strategy. And then someone would be like, dude, this shit sucks. And I'd be like, all right, fine. But
yeah.
I can get over it. I'm going to be 40 in a couple of years. Like, I don't need to be like, just, get off my lawn.
Yeah, I don't want to be like, exactly. You don't want to be the get off the lawn guy. But I think if it adds more offense to the, I mean, the game's changed. It changes every, you know, it changes every 40 or 50 years. And now I think we're in line for another change. And if that speeds up the game, and also speeding up the game might help some of these guys. There might be some pitchers who are like, wow, I'm actually way better when I get the ball and throw it. Instead of stepping off the mound every pitch and thinking too much. And there might be some hitters who are like, yeah, I like it better when I just react. And then there's going to be some hitters who are going to be like, no, I need an hour. And it's like, well, you're going to have to adjust. And then it'll start at the high school level. And then they'll realize, all right, we got to get the ball and throw it. No more taking your sweet ass time. And then before we know it, baseball is just doing better overall as a sport because it's more consistently. All right, this game's going to be about 2.5-3 hours. Nice. We're not going to, and it's not so much the, what fans can't stand, it's not a long game. I was at a game once that was 4 hours and 15 minutes. It didn't feel long. You know why? Because the final score was 12 to 11. There was nonstop action. So it was fun. But what we don't like is the mound visits and stepping out of the box. And even though the intentional walk thing only shaves like 25 seconds off, it's still 25 seconds of just sitting there doing nothing. You know, it's non-action. Let's just get to the fucking action. Let's get to the meat and potatoes of it. It'd be like if you ate your dinner like this. Now that I say meat and potatoes. All right, here's your salad. Finish with the salad. Every little bite. All right, here's your mashed potatoes. Finish the mashed potatoes. All right, now here's your steak. Finish. It's like, no, give me the mashed potatoes and the steak. I'll take a bite of the mashed potatoes. I'll take a bite of the steak, and I'll go back and forth. You know, let's pick up the pace.
Remember,
that was a shit analogy, and I apologize to everybody listening. Pedro Baez, you remember that shit when we had that game together, and I was screaming at him.
Yeah, that guy's awful.
That was the I was literally yelling, "You are ruining baseball." Every time you guys come on the mound, people are changing the channel. You're costing money. I remember we were in those seats right behind home plate in the upper deck. But you and Brido, you and McGowan got me onto that. That was upper deck right behind home plate, our sweet seats.
Because they're amazing seats for the least amount of money. And that's a little secret. Because you can pay so much money to sit along, like, the foul, like, on the first base side or something. That's not really that good of a seat.
It's not. And you could see everything from up there, which is what I like the most about it.
Yeah, and you can get to make fun of people for freaking out because they misjudged how soft the ball was hit, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
As a fly ball. Thinks every fly ball is a home
run. Oh, yeah, those people are the best. I love those guys. They're everywhere at Dodger Stadium, by the way.
The outfielders.
I know. Yeah, exactly. You could see the trajectory, too. I don't know. We're snobs, though. We watch so many baseball games. So we're kind of snobbish about it. But, yeah, man, I think that's been we've been recording for about an hour now. I think that sums up the podcast. We talked about some fun stuff. You know, it's still too early in the season for us to really dive into anything too crazy numbers-wise. As far as teams go, like you were saying, like – it is interesting, though. I'm glancing at the FanGraphs top 10 players in WAR. This is for both National League and American League. And it's Matt Chapman might be a surprise, the start he's off to. Mm-hmm. Diddy is leading the Yankees right now.
Diddy would be – I mean, if you said, like, he's the best hitter on that team, do you believe it?
No, of course not. I think he's off to a good start. And I think he's a good player, though. He's borderline top 10 at his position, according to MLB's The Shredder, if you watch that.
I don't.
He's got a thing he does every year. He does top 10 right now. And he does off a 3-year sample size, though. And
here's
Cubs
won. I wanted to ask. Who's the best pitcher?
Right now?
Right now.
Don't you still have to go Max Scherzer?
Thank you.
Yeah, 2 Cy Youngs in a row. I think he's the best pitcher right now. Yeah.
Buster Olney did a. I almost said Posey, then I couldn't figure out why it sounded wrong.
Yeah.
Buster Olney from ESPN did a thing, and more than 50% of the people who answered said Kershaw was the best pitcher in baseball. And so, like, I started, like, I got way too rabbit hole on looking at stats over the past 3 years. I see zero scenario where it's not Max Scherzer.
You know, Kershaw's got the name, the strikeout numbers, so I think, you know, Dodgers are more popular, so that's probably where you get it from. The Nationals, despite being in the playoffs 3 years in a row, like the Cubs and Dodgers, I still think they kind of go under the radar. And Scherzer definitely went under the radar when he was playing in Detroit, you know, so that could be the reason. But I agree with you. It's definitely Scherzer. You can't argue with that.
I think Kershaw is 2. And here's the thing. Kershaw was so good a few years ago that anytime that he slips a little bit, it's like, it looks like it's a debacle,
yeah.
But his velocity is down, and this is usually he starts so great. And I think that what's so funny is that him on the decline is still the number 2 pitcher in the world. And I think that the only other people that can even be in that category that you can argue are Kluber and Sale. So those are the 4 guys. Bill Dames actually does a pitcher ranking kind of the same way that tennis does, because he was like, wouldn't it be cool if baseball was like, we have a 1, like the number 1 pitcher versus the number 2 pitcher.
Oh, kind of like how boxing and UFC does, like this is the number 1 ranked fighter versus the number 11 ranked fighter or whatever.
So he has a pitcher ranking, and I think he has Kluber as number 1, which is fine. I mean, Kluber, Sale, Kershaw, and Scherzer are, in my opinion, that's top tier.
Yes.
And that,
that's interchangeable.
Like, I know they're all white guys, and I'm sorry.
Gives a shit. That's what I love about sports. It doesn't matter what you look like. I can't even say the guy's name I was talking about earlier, and I still was praising him. But here's the rest of the WAR real quick. Freddie Freeman at 3, Bryce Harper at 4, Bogaerts 5, Chris Bryant 6, Ryan Flaherty 7, Carlos Correa 8, Jose Altuve 9. Rhys Hopkins is number 10. Adam Eaton 11. AJ Pollock I've always been a fan of. Glad he's healthy. He's 12. But those are the other two. I'm not going to go down the whole lineup. But I'm just saying your top 10 after a week is about what you'd think it'd be, you know, minus Mike Trout.
Well, right. The Braves are scoring like 8 runs a game, and so that Flaherty guy is going to drop off.
Yeah, I mean, the Phillies dropped 20 runs last night, so that's going to help their offense overall.
I haven't even talked about Gabe.
Although
Gassler.
I looked Jake we'll the Snakes that. Off to a rough start. I think I saw you give up 3 runs in the first. I don't know how the rest of that start went down, but I did see his first inning didn't look too good. And I have nothing bad to say about Jake Arrieta. Jake Arrieta, anyone who's on that Cubs World Series team, in my eyes, is forever a Cub. Maybe I'll forget about Chad because he's only there for 2 months. But I love Jake, and it didn't work out. You know, move on.
I've been the only exception.
Yeah, he's my only exception. I'll make that too. But Jake, I wish him well, is what I'm saying. I don't want him winning Cy Young's because that'll make us look like assholes for not giving him his money. But I want him to do well. He's a great pitcher, and I'm sure he'll have a couple of years where he's really good. But I think it was the right move by Theo because, Yu Darvish's fastball went up last year. Jake's went down by 2 or 3 miles an hour. So, you know, you project out from that. Yeah, you can't blame Theo in that regard. All right, man. Anything you want to plug for people to check you out this upcoming week?
Yeah, sure. If you're in LA, I'm at Blam 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 on Wednesday.
Blam Blam Blam's on Tuesdays, I thought.
Whatever day it is, yeah, I'm there. Okay, so I'm at Mike Bridenstine on Instagram, at Brido on Twitter.
There you go, man.
And buy my album on all.
Yeah, man, buy it on iTunes, people. You can buy mine there too. I will be headlining the St. Louis Funny Bone. Wednesday through Sunday. So a lot of chance, I'm doing like 9 shows. So a lot of chances. And I'm going to be working what I think will become my next album. I'm very close to having this new hour where I like it. So.
Oof. It's called Papa Don't Preach.
Actually, that's not a bad title, man. I might take that. That's a great title. Oh, dude, I'm also going to the Cardinals Brewers game on Wednesday. I'm going to go by myself. I don't know if I have anyone to go with yet.
Say hi to Dexter.
Yeah, I'm going to give Dexter a wave. I'm not going to wear any cup shit, though. I don't want to fucking have people bother me, though. But it's supposed to be like 70 on Wednesday in St. Louis, and I got the tickets real cheap. So anyway, though. All right. Well, that's been the podcast. This has been Comedians Talking Baseball. Check us out next week. Write us a review on iTunes. Next week, we'll have our fictional lineup for you from all the best baseball movies. And Brido, you have yourself a good one.
Happy WrestleMania
Day, everybody. Thanks for listening.
Bye.